Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Glad you could make it. Hope you stick around for a while tonight. How you doing? Did you have a good weekend? Huh? I had a great time. I went to Minneapolis, guest of Janet Roberts and the AM 950 KTNF staff and volunteers and everybody connected with that station. What a wonderful group of people. I wasn't the only liberal talk show host there. Stephanie was there. Bill Press was there. Tom Hartman was there. We had one conservative talk show host there, too, just to balance things out. But it was a great time. It was the Minnesota Blue State Bash, and lots and lots of people, lots and lots of dancing, a great band, all kinds of politicians, Democrats. We were hoping Michelle Bachmann would show up so that we could get her drunk and take all her clothes off of her and put her out in the snow. But she just yeah, there was snow there. It was colder than a well digger's ass there. Al Franken apparently got the invitation too late. No, I mean that literally. He got it too late. Otherwise, he would have come. But it was a great time. And Janet Roberts, who is the honcho at AM 950 KTNF, deserves an awful lot of praise and applause for keeping that station going the way she has, and it's doing just fine. So to everybody who made my trip pleasant, thank you. Apparently there's a lot of pictures out and a couple of videos from that gig. If you have a line, I can't seem to find it. If you have a link to the photos that were taken or the videos that were taken, send it to me. I'd like to see if I remember everything that occurred. No, I don't mean to make that sound like I was drinking. I don't drink when I'm on the road. But it was great fun. It was good to see my old buddy Hartman again. Asked him if he's got another book out yet. It's been 3 weeks since the last one came out, I think. Great to hear him speak to the crowd. Stephanie, who is always a hoot, Miller was there. And, of course, Bill Press, who slogs it out from the liberal perspective in Washington. And again, we had one conservative up on the stand, and that was okay. I mean, sorry to balance things out, right? What else we got? Oh, welcome to KTRC in Santa Fe and KJFK in Reno, Nevada, for we're now on our broadcast list. Glad to get you folks live, especially KTRC, we go back years in Santa Fe. Back to the old IE America radio days when we had two stations and Sirius. I don't think we even had, we had Clinton, Arkansas and Santa Fe. Thank God for Sirius. They kept us alive.
Wasn't there some little tiny station in like Anniston, Alabama?
No,
there was.
Yeah, and she got all irritated at me because I wasn't a Christian.
You weren't a Christian.
I wasn't a Christian.
You're not Christian, Mike. Why aren't you a Christian?
Why aren't you a Christian?
But I think the UAW owned that station, so that poor lady was forced to listen to the non-Christian Mike Malloy on her station. But then, and Sirius back then had what, 11 subscribers? 14? Now we're talking about
We've come a long way since then, and we do appreciate all the stations who have stayed with us all these years, Sirius XM, and now I think you're going to see the list expand here rapidly with the final, thank God, death of this decaying, rotten Air America. That after the first 2 years was to talk radio what formaldehyde is to a dead body. It was just awful. So thanks again to KTRC and KJFK for joining us in the lineup.
There was some good talent there, even to the end. It was management that was so
Oh, sure.
Rotten.
Oh, yeah. Well, that goes without saying. The most of the people who were on the air there, we managed to keep the ones who are not really liberals off the air. Towards the end, it got kind of weird. But they're gone. I just found this story kind of funny. That's all. Funny in a macabre sort of way. It's from Moscow, Russia. 100 Russian Orthodox believers, Russian Orthodox Christians, have been hospitalized after drinking holy water during a during Epiphany celebrations in the city of Irkutsk, according to the Associated Press. A total of 117 people, including 48 children, were in the hospital with acute intestinal pain after drinking the holy water. It came from wells in and around a local church. 204 people required medical treatment after drinking the water. Many Russians consider any water obtained on Epiphany, which they celebrate on January 19th, to be holy. Of course, the truth is tap water in most of Russia is undrinkable. But how do you explain, there's 48 children are still in the hospital, how do you say to the kids who were told they were drinking holy water? I mean, what do you say now? Do you say, well, the devil decided to make you sick? Or do you say, Jesus doesn't love you? Man. Back in this country, South Carolina just keeps turning out the psychos in their government, whether it's state government or federal government. It's incredible. Now this guy, Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer, has drawn a comparison between feeding stray animals and parents whose children are on free or reduced price lunches in that state. Feeding stray animals and the poor. Oh, by the way, he's running for the Republican nomination for governor of that state. He made his remarks during a town hall meeting. And he said, I'm quoting from the Associated Press, he said, from a staff writer at the Greenville News, I think. He said, quote, my grandmother was not a highly educated woman, but she told me as a small child to quit feeding stray animals. You know why? Because they breed. You're facilitating the problem. Ooh, big word there, Andre. You're facilitating the problem if you give an animal or a person ample food supply. You know why? Because they will reproduce, especially ones that don't think too much farther than that. And so what you've got to do is you got to curtail that type of behavior. They don't know any better. Well, Andre Bauer, I don't know what he's talking about. In South Carolina, 58% of students participate in the free and reduced price lunch program. 58%. What are you going to do, Andre, you Republican thug? What are you going to do? You want to stop feeding those kids? Because if you stop feeding them and make sure that they don't get any more food, they will die. They won't breed. Is that what you want, you slimy? 45% of the kids in Greenville County, which is where he gave the speech, I think, are on free or reduced price lunch programs. Now, this thug's remarks came during a speech in which he said government should take away all that assistance, free lunches, whatever they're getting from the state, from the feds, take it away. If those receiving the help didn't pass drug tests, what does he have in mind? Having kindergartners, first and second graders show up to have blood taken to see if they're on drugs? This is how a Republican thinks. This is how a conservative thinks. This is why Republicans and conservatives demonstrate over and over again that they are sociopaths and that they're sick in the head. Show up and pass drug tests. If you don't attend PTA meetings, or if your children are on free or reduced price lunches. Imagine all the little kindergartners. Now, he doesn't say who's going to pay for this, but 58% of the students in South Carolina are on these feeding programs. This is how a Republican thinks. People in the world, come on. Every boy, every girl, come on. If you know it ain't over till God says that it's over, come on. Come on, let's go. Somebody.
go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So this lieutenant governor over in South Carolina, Andre Bauer, who wants to be governor, of course he's a Republican, my God, equates stray animals to people on government aid or vice versa. People on government aid are the equivalent of stray animals, and you know they breed, so don't feed them. He suggests that the kids on the free lunch program or reduced price lunch program be thrown off unless they will submit to drug tests or have their parents attend PTA meetings. And even then, he's a little reluctant to feed them. 58% of students in South Carolina participate in this lunch program, 45% in Greenville County, where he gave this speech. Later in the speech, he said, quote, "I can show you a bar graph where free and reduced lunch has the worst test scores in the state of South Carolina." I didn't know they were testing lunch. Wow, that must be difficult. He added, quote, "You show me the school that has the highest free and reduced lunch, and I'll show you the worst test scores, folks. It's there, period. So how do you fix it? Well, you say, look, if you receive goods or services from the government, then you owe something back," end quote. How many things are wrong with that? I wonder if this freak ever took anything from the government. Well, he rides on government roads. He uses the post office. I mean, he ought to give something back, shouldn't he? He ought to do something. I wonder if he's ever been or shall be at some point on welfare. Probably will be. So he's figured out. He's like the rooster that crows every morning and thinks he made the sun come up. He's figured out that poor schools that have the worst test scores also give free lunches. So to this moron, there's your equation. Free lunch equals poor test scores. If you take away the free lunch, the test scores will go up. This is how Republicans and conservatives think. And there's no point trying to explain to this idiot the incredible asininity of what he said, what the Greenville newspaper reported he said. He went on to say, the reason I'm talking about this is because this is indicative of all Republican office holders and most, if not all, Republican rank and file. They're greedy, selfish thugs. Every single one. The person working next to you at work, if you still have a job, if that person is Republican, he or she is a selfish, grasping thug. If, you know, somebody sits next to you in church who's Republican, they're a selfish, greedy thug. And they all think this way. You know, I said a couple of years, a year and a half ago during the primary, or 2 years ago during the primary season, let McCain, Palin have it. You know what would have happened? By this point, the United States would probably, I don't know, we would probably be bartering dead animals with each other for food. The kind that Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer of South Carolina says you shouldn't feed because they just breed. But instead, we put somebody that promised us a lot of stuff about hope and change. Nothing specific, just hope and change. And, of course, things have gotten worse, not because of Obama necessarily, although he certainly hasn't provided any leadership, but because of the overwhelming nature of the problems that were designed to overwhelm him. I mean, this is not an accident. This started 30 years ago with Reagan. It was designed to overwhelm the system, and anybody who tried to fight against the Republican-conservative destruction of this country. But I digress. So Andre Bauer is your typical Republican, rank and file, office holder, state or federal. Stop feeding poor people. Let them die. Stop feeding poor children. Let them die unless they can pass a drug test. And again, imagine 7-year-olds lining up to give blood for a drug test. Yeah. It's astonishing. Now, as far as Bauer State, South Carolina, Well, here's an example first. A kid named Tymeco Gregory, he grew up in a single-parent home where he said his family relied on free lunch programs at school to survive while struggling to pay bills. Gregory said, quote, "If I didn't get any money or help with food for school, we probably would have had to go without eating. We don't have a lot of extra money." He's now an 18-year-old freshman physics major at Wofford College. And he credited, this kid credited a support system from Furman University's Bridges to a Brighter Future program and government assistance with helping him achieve his goal to attend college. Physics major. Do you suppose Lieutenant Governor Andre Bauer understands anything about physics? Of course not. But Andre Bauer's state, in individuals living below the poverty line, the state of South Carolina is ninth from the top being the worst state. 16% of the entire population lives below the poverty line. They're behind Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas, West Virginia, New Mexico. What do you notice about those 10 states? Other than New Mexico, well, you figured it out yourself, didn't you?
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. So back to Andre Bauer, Lieutenant Governor of South Carolina, and his statement that kids who are on food assistance programs in the local schools are equivalent to animals. It's never surprising, but when Republicans say this, it's just the redundancy is what gets me. They never stop, never stop. And as far as his state, the state of which he's lieutenant governor, 16% of the population is below the poverty level. And the poverty level is, I think, for a family of four, I think it's $22,000 a year. Now think about that for a second. 16% of the people who live in the state. Oh, my God. And of the families below the poverty line, 13% of the families are below the poverty line. 58% of the students in the state of South Carolina are on free lunch programs or reduced price. And interestingly, individuals below the poverty line and families below the poverty line, South Carolina ranks ninth from the top. That means number one is the worst. South Carolina is ninth. That means there are 41 states in better condition than South Carolina. And this person, this Republican, suggests that elementary school kids should be tested before they get drug tested before they get something to eat. Would that be every day, Mr. Bauer? And the states that are in that group of top 10 worst states where it concerns this sort of thing, poverty line, are, of course, Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, Texas, West Virginia, South Carolina, and somehow New Mexico got in there. But you're not surprised about that list, are you? Of course not. That's the list that always makes it the worst, absolute worst. The only one missing there is Georgia. How did we not be on the list? And Florida. I guess Georgia and Florida might be 11th and 12th or something. But when you have the highest rates of teen pregnancy, the highest rates of murder, the highest rates of welfare recipients, the highest poverty rates, the lowest educational rates in terms of meeting standards, the highest church attendance. It's all right here in the South. Do you find that interesting? George in Oregon says so. He wants to take he wants kids to take a drug test to get a meal. How about we make Andre and his ilk take an intelligence test before they can run for office? That would really improve the politics in South Carolina, and it would severely reduce the number of Republicans. What a dirtbag. Yeah, he is, George. Every time I see something like that, again, it's not the shock of seeing a statement like that from a Republican, whether it's an office holder or the person who lives next door to you. It's the redundancy. They keep saying it over and over and over again. How many Republicans right now, right this minute, how many Republicans in South Carolina send their children to school where their children are on a reduced or free lunch program? Now, if 58% of the students in South Carolina, that's black, white, Asian, Latino, they don't break it down. 58% of the students in South Carolina are on food assistance programs. How many of those kids have Republican parents? South Carolina is a Republican state. It's the state that has the governor who would say he was out on the Appalachian Trail while he was down in South America diddling his girlfriend and then go to church on Sunday and raise his hands and praise Jesus. Oh, God. Now, that's not all. The latest news from the Nazi branch of American media, no, not Fox, but Newsmax, Cat Mary sends this to me in Memphis, is that the Republican Party is considering Senator John Thune from South Dakota as a presidential candidate for 2012. He's not the only one. This Pawlenty freak up in Minnesota. And we'll get to him in a second, Tim Pawlenty. Anyway, Cat Mary says, Thune is an evangelical Christian opposed to everything that's decent. He's against women's rights. He's against funding of the infrastructure of this country. He's against education. He's against children's health care. He's against sensible drug policies. He is for big oil. He's against the environment. He's for the so-called Patriot Act. He's against sex education. On and on and on ad nauseum. And Cat Mary writes, did I mention that he served under senile Ronnie Reagan and that he wants constitutional amendments to ban gay marriage and flag burning and that he voted to confirm John Roberts and Sammy the Fish Alito? Sounds like a perfect Republo fascist to me. Oh, lawsy. Cat Mary in Memphis. Yes, oh, lawsy is right. So there you go. You've got Andre Bauer and John Thune. And then, of course, there's Tim Pawlenty. You know, Minnesota, after spending a couple of days, I feel like an expert on Minnesota, but I'm not, traditionally recognized as a leader in providing health care to the citizens of that state. It's beginning to see, though, the disintegration of its health care system for the poor. Minnesota is, according to Michael Stapleton, writing at WSWS.org, high-profile programs in Minnesota are soon going to end. The General Assistance Medical Care, GAMC, will no longer be funded as of March 1st, and the Critical Access Dental Provider Program expires in April. Hospitals and local authorities there are scrambling to find solutions for this pending crisis dumped in their laps by the state government. Minnesota. The General Medical Assistance Care currently provides medical and drug benefits to about 30,000 adults. The program covers adults without dependent children with incomes up to $677 a month. Now, most of the people using this program have chronic illnesses, including mental illnesses, and are sometimes homeless. The only income for many of the recipients of this GAMC, this medical care, the only income for many of those people is $203 a month in welfare assistance. $203. $45 a week. The co-payments for Minnesota Care which is another program there. Minnesota Care. That's another state health care program for the poor. The co-payments for Minnesota Care are $3 per medication. Now, that's a significant burden for people living on $203 a month who need multiple medications. And as Michael Stapleton writes, even the homeless sometimes have to pay housing costs out of their limited incomes if they're among those who are able to find a bed at a homeless shelter, which may cost them $120 a month to keep. Out of $203, $120. Now we're down to $43, and the medications are $3 copay. Huh? The Department of Human Services, Minnesota, will require counties now to pay the Minnesota Care premiums, which average about $5 per person per month. $5 per person per month for the soon-to-be former general assistance medical care recipients, because they're being thrown off the rolls. There's no money. Art Gonzalez, the CEO of Hennepin County Medical Center, Minnesota's largest hospital system, told Channel 11 in Minneapolis, quote, once somebody is treated and released, the likelihood of them needing to comply with the eligibility process to remain on the program also becomes somewhat less of a motivation at that point in time. In all probability, we won't be paid for that care, and deficits will accumulate until it all becomes unsustainable. Now he's talking about going to the hospital to try to get some help. HCMC, there's too many damn acronyms here. That's the Hennepin County Medical Center, is closing clinics, plans to cut as many as 200 positions. It has warned that resources directed at disaster preparedness, teaching, and training programs for agencies responding to 9/11 calls, as well as care to provided to out-of-state residents transported there for life-saving services. All this will be affected. And the Minnesota Hospital Association estimates that the elimination of this general assistance medical care program will result in over 7,500 job losses. Minneapolis Police Chief Tim Dolan said, quote, these individuals, the ones that, let me back up. The strain on hospitals will correspond with the strain on prisons and jails unequipped to handle the serious medical and mental health needs of the increased prison population, which is expected when general assistance medical care ends. Police chief in Minneapolis said these individuals know, they'll tell you that if they have a problem finding their meds, they know that if they get arrested, they will get their meds.
Before
the hour. So back to this about Minnesota. We were talking about South Carolina and what else? Also in Nashville. Nashville, the poverty rate hits 18% in Nashville. That's a study released by the nonprofit Brookings Institution. And, of course, Tennessee is chock-a-block with Republican politicians, right? Back to Minnesota, the elimination of the dental program there may be less dramatic than the elimination of the general assistance medical care program. But it's going to affect thousands of Minnesotans who contribute to the overall strain on the healthcare system, particularly emergency rooms. Now, we all know, because our mom has told us, dental disease is almost entirely preventable, right? Even so, according to this, some 20,000 Minnesotans visit the emergency room for dental care each year. And the loss of this program, the state assistance program, will cause that number to rise significantly. Normal preventive care is around $250 per year versus a potential cost. If you go to the emergency room, for general anesthesia alone, it's going to cost $10,000. So, like the police chief of in Minneapolis said, Tom Dolan, about the serious medical medical and mental health programs are being cut. He says if these people can't get their meds, very simple, they go commit a crime, get arrested. It has come to that in this country. This is nothing new. This occurs in the South all the time. I'm just shocked to know that it's occurring in a state like Minnesota. Minnesota is home to 19 Fortune 500 companies and a whole clutch of billionaires. They've got incredible wealth in that state. But also growing is this social inequality. And the Democrats in the legislature so far will do nothing to threaten the private accumulation of wealth, no matter how severe the social crisis becomes. Democrats are not doing anything. You know, at the Blue State Bash the other night, there were an awful lot of Democratic politicians, would-be governors, would-be this, would-be that. And I met a bunch of them. They all seemed like very, very nice people. And the couple that I talked to of the potential politicians from the state of Minnesota nationally and within the state all claim that although they're Democrats, they're not going to be the typical Democrat. They're going to be an independent Democrat that is going to work for, you know, the Democrat farmer labor coalition in Minnesota, the Paul Wellstone coalition. Everybody knows what that is in Minnesota, and a lot of people outside the state. But where is that organization? The couple of politicians I talked to, or would-be politicians, said that that was the model they were going to follow. I hope they do. I really hope they do. And I don't know why they just don't say that, you know, the old, that coalition of farmers and union members and Democrats, why not call it what it is? It's an agrarian, democratic, socialist form of government. You know, the small farms are left alone. Don't bother small farmers. Let them produce. Don't bother teachers. Let them teach. Support labor unions. What is so weird about that? Now, the press coverage of this crisis in Minnesota, dental health, mental health, and physical health, all these healthcare programs designed for the poor, working poor, unemployed poor, whatever. The press coverage concerning the budget cuts that is causing this crisis has largely focused on the Republican governor, Tim Pawlenty's use of his so-called unallotment authority to balance the budget. Unallotment authority in Minnesota allows the governor, when faced with an unforeseen budget crisis, to reduce or eliminate spending previously allocated. He doesn't have to go back to the legislature. He could just say, no, not going to do it. The authority has only been used 6 times in Minnesota's history. And Minnesota Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty has accounted for 3 of those uses. When was Minnesota a state? 18 what? 6 times they've used this authority. 3 of those were by the Republican governor who wants to be president. It's astonishing. And again, as the article says, Pawlenty's actions deserve scrutiny because it's reported he's going to seek the 2012 Republican presidential nomination. But in fairness, Focusing on Paul Lente masks the role of the Democratic-controlled legislature, which cut $4.6 billion on its own last session, including $537 million from the Health and Human Services budget. Right? Now, those cuts included reduced or delayed funding to nursing homes, long-term care facilities, hospitals, specialty care providers, and people with disabilities. And you can count on the Minnesota legislature to cut more social programs in the coming year because the budget crisis has only increased since the last session. And again, Minnesota is not a poor state. It's not a poor state at all. But it is clearly indicative of the results that a lot of states are feel that they're forced into as a result of the destruction brought about by the Republicans that have held control of this country for the past 8 years and the Democrats who simply do not have the will to change things. They simply will not.
Forget your loved one.
The hour. Jamie in Maryland, of course, points out, I think, pretty much the obvious, the most likely reason for New Mexico being on that top 10 list of state poverty rates is the relatively high proportion of Native Americans in the state of New Mexico and the accompanying high rates of unemployment among tribal peoples. The National American Indian Housing Council reports that the poverty rate for Native Americans is approximately 26%. The poverty rate, not the unemployment rate, the poverty rate. And as Jamie points out, more Americans kicked to the curb. Jamie in Maryland. Yep. How long do you think we can sustain this as a coherent nation? That's why if the Republicans do make some gains during the 2010 election, even though that's the natural order of the political system, they'll all start frothing at the mouth and peeing in their pants, that proves that America is drifting to the right. That's what they're saying already. I think O'Reilly said the other night that America is becoming more right, and that's the reason Air America died. And, you know, I just want to scream at this geek. No, that's not it, Bill. You don't know. You weren't there. I was. It was because poor management. But if the country is drifting to the right, it's drifting to the right because of the fear and ignorance generated by people like Bill O'Reilly and his cohort, which is Legion. I mean, how many right-wingers, how many neo-Nazis are there on the air? Think about it. Wherever you're listening to this program, think about the right-wing programs that you can hear, and then this one, and maybe Hartman, you know, maybe Press, for political talk, maybe Randy. And it just, I mean, the cadre of left-leaning, liberal-leaning, and most of my my colleagues on the so-called left in the radio business are not really on the left. They really aren't. Bless their hearts. They're liberal, but I don't hear any of them advocating democratic socialism, which is about the only thing that's going to turn things around. I guess Tom occasionally gets close to it. I don't know. I can't pick up his program unless I am in the car listening to Sirius or XM, because Atlanta, Georgia would not allow a Tom Hartman on the air, would not allow Randy Rhodes on the air, would not allow a Mike Malloy on the air. It's just not allowed. And this is the thing. I've talked about this for 5, 10, 15 years. The thing that drives me crazy, in a friendly sort of way, is how these right-wingers constantly say in media that it was the market that chose right-wing neo-Nazi craziness like Beck and Hannity and the rest of these thugs. That's not the case at all. Not the case at all. You take any market, I don't care where it is, unless it's someplace in South Carolina, and you put Hartman, me, press, Randy, on the air, up against any of these thugs. And the balance would be pretty much 50-50, with the exception of South Carolina. It might even be a little bit more to the audience numbers would drift a little bit more toward us on the so-called liberal left, which is not really liberal left. It really isn't. It's more like liberal centrist until you get to this program. And you know that. Come on, you know that. Where was I? Anyway, to the folks in Minnesota who are listening, I'm not trying to bite the hand that fed us over the weekend with that wonderful Blue State bash in reporting, because everybody in Minnesota understands that some of their welfare programs for the working poor and people below the poverty line are being gutted, are being ended. They understand that. It's the people outside the state of Minnesota that don't know this is going on. Why should they? Poverty rates in Nashville hitting 17-18% poverty rates. I'm not talking about unemployment. I'm talking about poverty rates. South Carolina, 58% of the school kids on subsidized lunch programs. I don't know what it is here in Georgia. I know it's high, because we're part of that old Confederate South. That's where all so much of the what am I trying to say? The insanity, the political insanity, is inculcated here, and then spreads out the rest of the country. Except in times like these, where every state government, just about, isn't it, is on the verge of bankruptcy. States can't do deficit spending. I don't know if that's prohibited by the Constitution of the United States or if it's all the state constitutions. You don't have to send me an email about it. It doesn't matter. I just know that states can't do deficit spending. And who gets it first in times like these? Who gets it right in the chops, in the neck first? Of course, kids. And you break it down further, poor kids. They're the ones who get it first. Who gets it next? Indigent people, people who desperately need help, old people who don't have, who might be living in a care facilities, then who? Physically challenged people, then who? The unemployed, then who? You know, it's incredible. They start with the ones that have the least clout and the most need and chop them off at the legs. And how did this happen? First of all, the banksters, these thugs, these capitalist pigs, the ones that are just, and even today, I mean, just gloating over their multi-million dollar bonuses while the rest of the country is really, truly suffering. The people in so-called Wall Street, which is just a metaphor, Wall Street is a metaphor for these huge conglomerates that couldn't care less about people. And now they have the power to influence every single election. From this point forward, forever because there'll never be a constitutional amendment against them. And the right-wing neo-Nazi Supreme Court in this country has ruled that corporations now have the same rights of freedom of speech as human beings, as individuals. I'm still reeling from that one. I don't think that's really sunk in yet to most of us in this country, who even the right-wing dunderheads who let Beck and Hannity and the rest of these monsters think for them. I don't think they've gotten it either. You know, they can suck around the Hannity program and Fox News and Beck and the rest of these, you know, until hell freezes over. Go ahead, boys and girls, do it. But when the rubber hits the road, you people are going to get your heads chopped off also. You really don't think, do you, audience that listens to Beck? You don't think that he cares about you. He's playing you. And so is Hannity, and so is Limbaugh, and so are all these right-wingers. They're playing you. And you keep going back for more, which is a clear indication of mental illness. In Porto Alegre, Brazil, guess what happened today? You didn't hear about this, did you? Tens of thousands of people got together to kick off 5 days of the World Social Forum, where they get together and scream and rant against U.S. and European-style capitalism. It's a gathering that protests the bankers and other leaders who are going to attend the World Economic Forum, I think, starting Wednesday in Davos, Switzerland. They all get together at a ski resort in Switzerland. But these are the folks, and it's interesting, the Davos Conference, of course, is in the Northern Hemisphere. The World Social Forum is in the Southern Hemisphere. And, of course, you understand the reason for that. A little bit more on that when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
I'm 21 past the hour. You know, when I talk about the handful of left-leaning programs on, I'm usually referring to the ones that you can get over the air or via satellite radio. There is another handful that are struggling. Jeff Farias and the old Sarge and Bob Kincaid at headonradio.com, headonradionetwork.com. And I keep getting emails about a woman who has a blog and I guess an internet program named Nicole Sandler from South Florida. Nicole Sandler. I know that she was in the rock and roll end of the business, but apparently she's been filling in Air America before they went belly up. Susan in Squim, is that how you say that? Squim, Washington, said, Mike, don't forget Nicole Sandler. She was Air American. I think she really is very left-leaning, but I don't think she's a socialist the way we are, Susan writes. She is now totally online at radioornot.com with web radio and video live casts 3 to 6, Monday through Thursday. 3 to 6, Monday through Thursday. So if you want to check it out, let me know. RadioOrNot.com, Nicole Sandler. Kathy says she's heard of her. So I don't mean to miss these liberal talk programs that are still going out there. Head on Radio Network, of course, is the one I'm most familiar with. Bob Kincaid, as a matter of fact, has contributed a huge chunk of equipment to this program to make it happen. You know, I've had a lot of contact with his co-producers in Australia. I think that was the proper way to put it. And his program is usually streamed by White Rose Society, a rebroadcast immediately after this one. So, our show. So if you know of liberal or left-leaning programs that are just struggling, you know, let me know, especially if they're just internet. We'll talk about them, try to get some people to check them out. The audience is available. It's just nobody knows because we don't control these huge mega corporations, media corporations. Michael, in Roswell, New Mexico, we were talking about New Mexico being in that group of states with the highest poverty rates, right? Native Americans in New Mexico do contribute to New Mexico's always poor ranking in such categories, but this is also a right-to-work state and one that is overrepresented in government by the traditional power brokers in the oil and gas and ranching industries. Where I live, there's a rather small proportion of Native Americans, but it also has very little industry. It is dominated by service jobs. As a consequence, average wages are low, $8 an hour. And the percentage of residents living at or below the poverty line is chronically around 20%. Maybe some indication of the state's income disparities is reflected in the fact that in terms of annual average income, New Mexico also has the third richest county in the United States, Los Alamos. The disparity, that's from Michael and Roswell. The disparity, you can pick this up any place and read it in a number of sources, the disparity between wealth and poverty in this country or the upper income levels and the lowest income levels has never been greater than it is now, unless you want to go back to, immediately after the country was put together, if you want to go back to slavery, I guess, where the white landowners owned everything and the black workers owned nothing, not even their own waste. But in modern times, the disparity right now between the wealthiest and the working poor has never been greater. That cannot sustain. Eventually, and what it takes is what we are heading for. It's the collapse of the middle class. Again and again and again, revolution doesn't rise from the destitute poor. Revolution always arises from the middle class. Okay, there may be one or two exceptions if you want to go back 3,000 years, but you know what I'm talking about. It always comes from the middle class. But the middle class has to begin to collapse first. Or there has to be people within the middle class who see that a collapse is imminent unless something has changed. And power does not relinquish itself, ever. Ever. Have you ever known in your reading of history where power relinquishes or demotes itself to unpower? No. It's always taken.
Bye.
only with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, Peter B. Collins, don't forget him, another left-leaning or liberal talk show host, peterbcollins.com, internet only. He and I used to be on IE America Radio together. There's Peter Werby, forgot to mention him, Peter Werby in Detroit, who's on, I think he does still does a music show, but he's on Sunday nights in Detroit. PeterWerby.com. Regarding Andre Bauer, before I get back to the World Social Forum in Brazil, a good friend who is gay, I'm just going to leave it at that. A good friend who is gay writes, Mike, rumor has it that the real reason that Governor Appalachian Trail, that would be Stanford, or Terry Sanford over in South Carolina, was not impeached by the South Carolina legislature is because the lieutenant governor, Andre Bauer, is a closeted gay man based on the 100% record of Mike Rogers of blogactive.com. I'm of the opinion the rumors are more than just rumors and are based on fact. The closet is a dangerous place. It can become an incubator to turn its inhabitants into horrible monsters. Therefore, I nominate Andre Bauer for the Roy Cohn Award. The Roy Cohn Award is reserved for those who safely hide in the closet while bashing members of the lesbian and gay community. You know, Roy Cohn, the commie hunter. And what? You don't? You're not that old? Okay. Well, look it up. C-O-H-N. Roy Cohn. C-O-H-N. And my correspondent is a gay man who writes this. I had heard that, as a matter of fact, now that you mention it, GB. Back to the and GB is not closeted. I'm just saying. I'm just doing it that way. Puerto or Porto Alegre. It's not Spanish. It's Portuguese. Porto Alegre. Brazil. Today, tens of thousands of leftists massed to kick off 5 days of railing against the Davos convocation that's going to occur starting on Wednesday. Davos at the Swiss ski retreat in Switzerland is for the wealthy people, wealthy white people. A lot of people, non-whites, show up there, but they're there with their hands out to try to get some. But Middle Eastern sheikhs and North American capitalists and European capitalists and Australian capitalists and the people who are really murdering the entire globe show up to figure out how to keep the corpse alive while they continue to suck the blood of the of what's left of this tired world. Anyway, from Porto Alegre, Brazil, it says, accompanied by thundering drum beats and samba blaring from sound trucks, the exuberant activists, estimated by police to number 25,000, which means it's probably higher than that, marched through Porto Alegre, waving flags and shouting socialist slogans. They assailed corporate greed as the main reason the world plunged into an economic slump. Yes, indeed. A participant said the forum is especially important this year now that the governments from the United States to Europe are moving to play bigger roles in managing the global economy. And in contrast, World Economic Forum, that's the capitalists that meets Wednesday, starting Wednesday in Davos, is expected to see fewer leaders than in years past. And U.S. President Barack Obama's plan to clamp down on the size and activity of banks is sure to be on the minds of many of the rich and powerful heading to Switzerland. Sergio Bernardo, a Brazilian human rights activist sporting a bright red shirt emblazoned with the words bourgeoisie stinks, says they have driven the capitalist system into chaos. We're letting them know we can create a world free of exploitation that will help the poor. He said that that last year's Davos conference was similar to a wake, and that the lackluster turnout expected this year gives the impression that capitalism is on the downfall and hitting its limits. Yeah, it is. That's why the next form of economic supremacy has got to take root, and it's taking root in this country, and that is corporatism. Corporatism is not capitalism. Corporatism is just a shade away from fascism. It might even be called fascism. But it is not capitalism. It is a form of managed economy, corporatism, and managed political system that is as managed as anything the communists ever came up with in their managed economies. It's the same thing. It's just under a different heading. It is not shy, corporatism, of showing the wealth and the belligerence of its upper of its rulers. The communists, the Soviet communists, were always a little bit shy. The wealthy, the ones that became oligarchs, to let the proletariat understand what was really going on, or the proletariat would have risen, had another 1917. But the Russians, of course, just had any kind of resistance beaten out of them. They were just absolutely mashed into this lump of humanity. This is exactly what the corporatists do in the so-called Western societies, only they're not shy about their ostentatious wealth. They're not shy about it at all. Jesus Christ, just pick up any copy of the, oops, I cussed. Well, I went an hour and 41 minutes. That's pretty good. Pick up any copy of the New York Times any morning. Take the A section. Open it up. Look at the ads down the sides. Huh? $3,000 sweaters. try to get an apartment in New York. From antiwar.com, and in an in-depth interview with the Times of London, gearing up for the London Conference on Afghanistan, which is coming up, CENTCOM Commander U.S. General David Petraeus again cautioned that the war in Afghanistan was going to, quote, get harder before it gets easier, end quote, likening the January 2007 surge in Iraq to President Obama's December escalation. The general said he thought that the war in Afghanistan was going to take longer than the war in Iraq. Mr. General, it already has. Hello? Mr. Petraeus, we invaded Afghanistan in 2001. We invaded Iraq in 2003. Hello? Oh, well. Perhaps even more troubling, according to antiwar.com, over 8 years after the war began in Afghanistan, General Petraeus insisted he still hasn't heard any talk of setting a timetable for the end of the war, and said any prediction would be, quote, his words, premature, end quote. Several nations had hoped to use the London conference to set some sort of exit strategy for the seemingly endless conflict. But I thought I heard Barack Obama. See, this is, I lost it again. I honest to God thought I heard Barack Obama say that by the end of 2011 or the summer of 2011 or August 2010 or something, or was that Iraq? Was that Afghanistan? Was that East Asia or Eurasia? Which one was it? We've always been at war with Eurasia, right? No. We've always been at war with East Asia. Which was it? Petraeus suggested that the London conference would not so much focus on setting a timetable for a transition, but on deciding, quote, Petraeus, what transition really means. And, quote, oh, my God. We're going to have the London conference on Afghanistan to debate definitions. Transition? Where did that one come from? I thought it was withdrawal. We've always been at war with East Asia. Always. Always. Or was it Eurasia? I get confused. Maybe I should drink a little more Victory gin and smoke another pack of Victory cigarettes. When we come back after this break, I have something I want to share with you. It's a letter, open letter written by Rush Limbaugh. It's astonishing. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Open letter from Rush Limbaugh. He writes, the headline is, I don't even want to be alive anymore. He writes, I know there are a lot of people out there who are upset about some of the things I've been saying on my radio program lately. My comments about the situation in Haiti have hurt and angered many Americans who genuinely care about the plight of the Haitian people. And that hurt and anger will likely never go away. Many of you are probably wondering, what would compel a human being to say things like that? Well, here's your answer. I'm a very bad person. And to tell you the truth, I don't really want to be alive anymore. Try to look at it from my point of view. I have no reason to live. In my 59 years, I've made millions of dollars, built a veritable media empire, and accomplished virtually everything that a man of my limited imagination and worldview could possibly accomplish. And yet at this point, in no way could you refer to what I'm doing as living exactly. I just sort of exist. I derive no real pleasure from life. Oh, sure, I talk a big game about what a golf nut I am and how much I enjoy the taste of a fine cigar, but it's all horse blank, complete and utter horse blank. I don't enjoy that stuff. I don't enjoy anything. I don't even want to be here. The sadness and regret I feel every waking hour of my life is absolutely unbearable. I'm a miserable pig, and I don't want to exist. The irony is that even if I did die, the hell I would surely be sent to could not possibly be any worse than the bottomless pool of excrement I already paddle around in, like some demented excrement-covered walrus. In fact, every time I hear my voice coming through the headphones, I nearly gag, and I think, what the F am I doing? Why would I say that Michael J. Fox is faking his Parkinson's symptoms? Why would I find it funny to play a song called Barack the Magic Negro? Why would I tell people not to give aid to Haiti? What the F is wrong with me? I live in constant terror, and that terror informs my every word, thought, and action. See, the thing is, I honestly cannot control the bilious hatred and filth that oozes out of my mouth. I want to, believe me, I want to, but I can't. And every time I speak, a tiny voice inside my head is screaming, stop talking, you stupid, insensitive prick. Just stop effing talking. All you do is spread hate and fear, and the world would be a better place without you, you worthless, amoral, blank-blanking, blank face. What I should really do is just commit suicide. I have this little Sunday ritual I started around the time I publicly compared the tortured Abu Ghraib to a fraternity prank, where I climb into my jacuzzi and I put a gun in my mouth. but I can never work up the guts to pull the trigger. A few times I came close to overdosing on prescription pain pills, but my GD doctors were always there to save me. If I had any sense, I would just hold myself up in a Red Roof Inn with a case of Jack Daniels and slowly drink myself into the gaping maw of death itself. But what can I say? I guess I'm just too much of a blank blanking blank to follow through. You know what? I wish someone would just kill me. I'm serious. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. Oh, my God, how can you say such a thing? You can't print that in a newspaper. But see, I don't care anymore. I've cried my tears, I've battled my demons, and I've lost. It's over. It's all over. The only thing left for me to do now is just go away. Have I even once contributed a single ounce of good to humanity? Put me out of my misery. I wouldn't make a fuss. I wouldn't even humiliate myself by saying goodbye. For the first time in my odious, pitiful life, I'd accept my fate with quiet dignity. Then I wouldn't have to live with my wretched, wretched self. Oh, the release. I've imagined my death a thousand times over, and it's always the same. In my mind's eye, a serene setting comes into view. I see a funeral procession driving down some small-town main street in Nowheresville, USA. On one side of the street, a collection of sycophants and morons are paying their respects in subliterate, sanctimonious tones. And meanwhile, on the other side of the street, I can just make out the faint image of a young boy, his brow furrowed in confusion, clutching the hand of his father. "Who is that man, Daddy?" he asks as the hearse continues. Containing my bloated, lifeless body rolls by. "Who is that person they speak of?" The father will then lower his head and say, "There, my son, go the remains of Rush Hudson Limbaugh, the most abominable lump of festering dog blank in the history of American broadcasting. May the likes of him never again soil or tarnish the greatness of our fair country. Please forgive me, everyone. I'm so sorry." Rush Limbaugh writing in The Onion. Well, I didn't realize that he felt such a mountain, or would it be a pit of self-loathing? Wow, Rush Limbaugh. Okay. Is it time for a break? Not yet. When we do come back after the break, we will have some open phones for you, too, if you'd like to call in and chat. Oh, yeah, the mayor of Moscow, known for his overtly homophobic statement, said today that he would never allow a gay pride parade in the city, calling it satanic and saying that marchers would be punished. He said, "A gay parade cannot be called anything but a satanic act. We haven't permitted such a parade, and we won't permit it in the future." His name is Yuri Luskov. He called for gay marchers to be punished. He said, "It's high time we stop propagating nonsense discussions about human rights and bring to bear on them the full force and justice of the law." Gay rights campaigner Nikolai Alexeyev reaffirmed that plans for this year's gay pride parade will go ahead, despite the ban. "We don't plan to make any changes. We still plan to hold a gay parade on May the 29th, Alexeyev told the French news agency. In a public relations disaster for the city last year in Moscow, Alexeyev and other campaigners were brutally dragged into police vans by riot police in front of a crowd of international journalists. Just doesn't stop, does it? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. And again, welcome to KTRC in Santa Fe and KJFK in Reno. Two new Malloy Show affiliates. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. One more thing before we go to your calls. We have an open line here. The number is 877-996-2556. 877-99-MALLOY. This is from Shelby. Shelby writes, can you top this? I can remember being encouraged to explore the dictionary. And ours had illustrations, which she or he is talking about. It's from the LA Times today. A school district in Riverside County, California has pulled Merriam-Webster's 10th edition dictionary from school shelves because the dictionary included the term oral sex. The Menifee Union School District took the action last week after a parent complained about the dictionary. The newspaper from that area reports that some parents are angry about the move and want the dictionaries returned to the classrooms. School spokeswoman Betty Cadmus told the newspaper, quote, it's just not age appropriate. It's hard to sit and read the dictionary, but we'll be looking to find other things of a graphic nature, end quote. Huh? What does that mean? It's not age appropriate. What? The dictionary or the term? Well, then what you do, Betty, is you explain to the children that it's not an age appropriate term and to check back in 5 years, when it is age appropriate, I don't know. The school board will decide later whether to return the dictionaries to the classrooms. One board member told the Press Enterprise that there are probably more objectionable terms in the dictionary. Yes, there are. There's a whole bunch. Ooh, oral sex is the least. And what is objectionable about oral sex? Nothing I can think of. Maybe to the complaining parent, there's something objectionable. What is it? Is it oral sex itself or the fact that it's a dictionary? It's in the dictionary. Oh my God. Probably the former. And by the way, not to bum you out with a commemoration of a very, very horrific part of history. Over the next couple of days is the anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. There is an organization in Warsaw, Poland, the Auschwitz-Birkenau Survivors Association. And as you can imagine, the survivors of Auschwitz-Birkenau are dwindling in numbers. Stanislav Zerdadsky said, he was only 13 at the time, he said, after living 5 years in Warsaw under the Nazis, we were no longer children when we came to Auschwitz. We'd seen it all. Firing squads shooting innocents in the street, brutality, air raids, end quote. All told, around 232,000 children were held prisoner in Auschwitz, including 216,000 Jews, 11,000 Roma, 3,000 Poles, and the rest from Russia, Ukraine, and elsewhere. It's according to the Auschwitz-Birkenau Museum historians. More than 1.3 million people imprisoned in Auschwitz-Birkenau, some 1.1 million, mainly European Jews, perished either asphyxiated in the gas chambers or claimed by starvation, exhaustion, and disease. Anyway, this, over the next couple of days, is when the Soviet Army liberated Auschwitz. One of the women who was a kid there during the time. She writes, she remembers the Soviet reconnaissance unit entering the camp a day or two before January 27th when the arrival of the Red Army marked the camp's complete liberation. She said they were very ragged, very hungry. The troops set up a field kitchen in front of our children's barracks. Now, the troops, Soviet reconnaissance, they were very ragged, they were very hungry. The troops set up a field kitchen in front of our children's barrack. They were eating horse meat, and we, like dogs, begged them to give us a little. And they played with us, throwing the bones into the snow. We fetched them and chewed them. This woman said, choking back tears, freezing and starving, she searched for discarded clothes near the infamous crematoria and rummaged for food. She was among 30 children led out of the camp by a Polish woman survivor. She said, quote, it was bitterly cold. Corpses were jutting out of the snow on the ground. People who fell behind on the death march were shot. We were tripping over their corpses. What she's talking about there is about 10 days before the Soviet Red Army liberated the camps, the Nazis forced some 60,000 prisoners into the notorious death march to the dozens of Auschwitz subcamps, including a lot of kids. Anyway, it goes on and on and on. So the next couple of days commemorates the liberation 65 years ago of the death camps in Germany and Poland, mostly Poland. We are at 877-996-2556. Mark is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mark.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Just wanted to bring up the fact that if there's no more reason for Osama bin Laden to show any more ugly videos, he's got the right-wing echo machine, million-dollar broadcasters destroying this country. The latest is they're cheerleading this Supreme Court decision to take away the rights of the people and give it to corporate America. And, I mean, they're just cheerleading this on.
Aren't they?
And it's devastating. I mean, I don't know, Mike, if we can get these guys impeached, but it's sure a sign that it's just being a traitor to this country and the devastation that that ruling had on democracy in this country. There's just no words for it.
You know, I would be... I think you understand this. It would be impossible, politically, literally impossible, to impeach five Supreme Court justices all at once. If this were a different kind of country, one that practiced violence, I mean overt violence, we practice it, but not within our borders so much, unless it's against people of color when we put them in prison. But if we practice overt violence, those five Supreme Court justices in a different country would have been taken out on the streets by now and beaten senseless. There are countries around the globe that would not tolerate this, would not tolerate being told that human status has been reduced by the elevation of corporate status into some Uber person with billions of dollars who is now going to corrupt our political system. As far as getting out of this, though, Mark, I don't see a way to do it.
No, I agree with you, Mike. The only thing I have to say about it is, when they have ruled that other countries have influence in our democracy, I think that's where the line is drawn. Where you say that there's got to be something done.
I hear you, but the corporatists don't care. So many of the corporatists are. They're global corporations. They have shareholders in other countries. They don't care, Mark. They just don't care. I gotta leave it there, pal. Thanks.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's More Mike Malloy.
About 22 past the hour. Linda is in Buffalo, New York, listening on XM. Hey, Linda.
Hi, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm just fine. Just wanted to let you know about David Sirota's show.
Oh, okay.
On AM 60, 760 in Denver.
Yeah.
Very good show. It comes on 9 to 12 in our time.
Oh, really? Did I don't know if I knew about that. I didn't know Sirota had a program. Maybe I did know about it.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Oh, he's filling in for Jay Marvin. That's right.
Yeah, I believe Jay Marvin is very ill and has become permanent now, from what I understand, from what I read.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And also, I really wanted to thank you for the history you did last week on Haiti.
Uh-huh.
I do the podcast, and I'm not always current with them, so I'm just mentioning that. I know it was last week, but I really appreciated hearing of the full background and everything that you gave.
Yeah, and that, you know, a lot of that stuff I didn't know. I knew that we had a bloody history with the Haitian people.
Oh, yeah.
But all those details I wasn't aware of any more than you probably. I just got determined after that fool Robertson made the statements that he made.
That was so obnoxious.
Oh, my God.
I just it set my hair on edge.
Oh, tell me about it. Well, I just can't believe somebody calling himself a Christian who says that kind of stuff.
And also, you know, you always provide me with some kind of sense to this transition that we're going through, and you keep me going, and I really appreciate it.
Well, that's
going to join the DSA ASAP.
Okay. Democratic Socialists of America.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well, Linda, thank you. I appreciate it. Those are kind words. I appreciate it.
And
okay?
Keep it up.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Take care. That's nice of Linda to say that. Mordecai is in Madison, listening on the mic, 92.1. Hey, Mordecai.
Yes, first time I've gotten through.
I'm sorry?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Three very quick bullet points, Mr. Malloy. Constitution speaks of Supreme Court under good behavior. And other than that, Congress could take action. Second point, Roberts, that rat bastard chief of the court, was appointed by the Bush virus, because he awarded the coup d'etat in the year 2000. But the most important point is 9/11, and that marks the true military CIA coup d'etat. And even this current worm in the presidency is basing his Afghan escalation on 9/11. So can you speak of the basic facts of 9/11 Building 7, and why can't we have a debate on the air concerning that coup d'etat and the military explosives that did in that building?
Well, in the first place, Mordecai, I've talked about it. I feel like I've talked about it until I'm blue in the face. You know, it happened 9 years ago. Can you believe that? And over the course of the past 9 years, with the exception of 2008, 2009, all this past year, when I focused away from that and on current craziness. But prior to that, we put a lot of attention on that. My good friend Bob Alexander, who writes for this program on a fairly regular basis, he and I have had discussions about this. He's one of the he and Bridget are the two ethics advisors to this program, and that event was the event from which everything else that the Bush crime family has done to this country originated, and we understand that. We also understand, I don't care how many people say that it was just merely a failure of intelligence or a failure of this or a failure of that. Of course I don't believe that. This was a thought-out, engineered event. I'm not saying that the 19 bombers were somehow hypnotized into flying those planes into buildings. What I'm saying is the plot was there, and the Bush-Cheney government knew that the plot was there. They knew what the intelligence said, and they decided to let it happen, to give them the event that they needed to further accelerate this country's move to fascism. Now, I believe that. And I know I have a lot of listeners who think I'm crazier than a loon for believing that. But when you say a debate about what? You know, to put two people, a debate is usually two people or more, two opposing points of view. I have no interest in opening up this program to having someone who believes that 9/11 was to whatever degree engineered by or allowed to happen by the Bush crime family. And on the other hand, somebody who disagrees. That just goes back and forth endlessly. It's like the almost 50 years of debate about the Kennedy assassination. I know in my heart what I believe about this, and I'm sure you do too, Mordecai. And I don't know what else to say about it. We'll be right back.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Back to your calls. Richard is in Delray Beach, Florida. Hey, Richard.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, good. The reason I'm calling is about this Bin Laden tape.
Uh-huh.
You're familiar, I'm sure, with David Ray Griffin.
Sure.
Who's been at the forefront of writing books about 9/11.
Right.
And he's got a new book out, which I've heard him discuss on the internet. It's about Bin Laden, and he asked the question, he goes into whether Bin Laden is still alive or not.
Right.
He goes through all the evidence, which I just like to mention a few things, which I'm going to basically get...
Well, wait, let me just tell you before you do all that, I have already played on this program several times a bit of tape when Benazir Bhutto was being interviewed by David Frost for the BBC, I believe, not for the BBC, maybe it was for the BBC, a couple of years ago, right before she was assassinated, where she talked about or mentioned the death of Bin Laden, that, you know, most people in that part of the world understand that. So... I think most of the people who listen to this program understand that Bin Laden is dead, has been dead for some time. I don't think, I don't think that is, something that most of the people listening to this program are not familiar with. My point of view is this. If you take a look at the, for example, the novel 1984, they had Goldstein. Goldstein, right, was the face they put up for the 2 minutes hate and so on and so forth to keep people focused on this enemy of the state. Bin Laden has become, to whatever degree, greater or lesser degree, our Goldstein. And I don't believe he's alive either. I believe that the tapes, the audios or videos, whatever, that they're presenting is nonsense. Now, where those tapes are coming from, if they're coming from cells of Al-Qaeda, or if they're coming from the U.S. CIA, or if they're coming from one of our spook defense agencies. You know, nobody's heard from John Negroponte for an awful long time. And Negroponte, if you use a little makeup and put some Arab garb on him, he looks not unlike Osama bin Laden. So I'm not trying to cut you off, Ray or Richard. I'm just saying that most of the people who listen to this program, I think, have already come to the conclusion that Osama bin Laden is probably dead than a doornail and has been for some time. Joe's in San Diego listening on XM. Hello.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Okay.
Good.
Have you, that was back in 2008, January, I believe, right? When she was killed?
Yes, I think it was, right.
Yeah. I had that and I got erased.
Well, I've got it someplace in my archives. I may have to drag it out and put it out on the air again so people know that. Now, you know, who knows if she was telling the truth? Who knows if you know, I mean, this is the crazy stuff. Look, you and I know, I think you know this. Most people know that 4 years prior to the September 11, 2001 attacks, there was an organization in this country, a Project for a New American Century, that advocated two things. First of all, that the United States invade Iraq and Afghanistan. B, said that what this country needed in order to move the agenda, the right-wing agenda, up the next notch was for the United States to experience another, they called it another Pearl Harbor. And shortly after those statements were made, by gosh, we experienced another Pearl Harbor. As a matter of fact, this one was even more deadly because it killed more people and it was directly on our soil. So, you know, I don't even use the term conspiracy theory. To me, that's nonsense. The government of George W. Bush deliberately allowed to happen in this country an act of terror that took 3,000 lives. And from that point on, the Bush crime family subverted the Constitution. The Bush crime family involved us in two wars. The Bush crime family, on and on and on and on. But what the Democratic Party proved, Joe, was that they were complicit because they would not impeach him.
That's what they should have done.
Absolutely. And if remember, impeachment is just indictment. All they had to do, all Nancy Pelosi had to do, was to get out of the way and allow the House Judiciary Committee to hold open hearings, which is like a grand jury investigation. If the evidence was not there, then the evidence was not there.
How does the guy read My Pet Goat to two kids, a bunch of kids, nonchalantly like that without showing any of
right.
no remorse or anything? One building is practically down.
Well, that's the, you know, that
is going.
I think that's Bush's psychological makeup. Remember, he and his brothers had a sister who died. And Bush Sr. and that harridan that mothered these four explained to the boys that they would not grieve, they would not mention her name, they would do nothing. So all four of the Bush boys, and I think especially George, are sociopaths. And what is missing, what's missing from their psychological makeup is any kind of empathy or compassion for anything. They just don't have it. It was programmed out of them by their crazed parents all those years ago.
Have you heard about the $477 billion freeze on the budget for 2011 on the next 3 years that he's supposed to propose?
In the State of the Union?
Yeah,
right. I've only heard a little bit about this, but this is more of the Republican agenda.
I know.
This is why, at this point, I feel so utterly and absolutely betrayed by Barack Obama. And I probably shouldn't feel that way because he's not doing anything overt that with a couple of exceptions. I shouldn't say he's not doing anything. He's doing a couple of things that put what he said to the lie. But I've just completely lost faith in this man, totally and completely. And it's because of things like that. He is facilitating. I've never seen anything like this. The Democratic Party gets control of both houses of the legislative branch and the executive branch, and they can't do anything. They can't do anything. As a matter of fact, the President of the United States continues to pretend, to play pretend, as though the Republican Party is interested in furthering just a normal centrist agenda in this political agenda in this country. And Obama is sitting on top of that heap of the so-called center right administration pretending that he's getting things done with the Republicans. The Republicans are more or less saying, go screw yourself, Mr. Obama. You don't belong in the White House anyway. So we're just going to sit here and stop you from doing everything. And Obama continues to reach out to these pigs, continues. It's like the reverse of what Bill Clinton did. Bill Clinton triangulated. You know, he would take a little bit here and a little bit there and then put together his murderous agenda. Obama's not even doing that. Obama is just doing what the right wing dictates to him to do, including the Republican Party. Frankly, I'm sick of hearing it, sick of seeing it. Joe, I got to leave there. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. I get you loud and clear. Mark is in Sandy, Oregon. Hey, Mark.
Hey, on a brighter note, Mike, did you ever get the Christmas cheer that I sent you?
Oh, I did. Jesus, I took a shot of that and... I've still got 99% of the bottle left. That is good. That's really good stuff. I've got to wait until I can take a long weekend and drink that up. Whoa!
Well, it's not that addictive, but it is a lot of fun.
Yeah? What's the alcohol content in that? Seriously.
Well, it starts with a base of whiskey, and then you add orange extract, sugar, vanilla, cinnamon, cloves, nutmeg, and allspice. And you let it sit for a while, strain it through a coffee filter, and I made over 60 pints of that as Christmas gifts this year.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, and all Kathy made was strawberry jam. Jesus.
Well,
that is, that is pretty incredible stuff. What Mark's talking about, he sent us a Christmas present here, a bottle of home brew. I'll put it that way, home brew.
Yeah.
And man, oh, man, oh, man.
I'll send you the recipe, and Kathy can put it on the website if you feel like it.
Okay, that sounds cool. Yeah.
Well, Mike, I just briefly here, you know, we've always been warned about beware the nose of the camel, and all we can say is the camel is now in the tent.
Yeah.
I think we've seen the end of it, and everybody seems mystified by the way things are going, but, you know, if you took all of the blue dog Democrats and you threw them in with the Republicans, and we go down to the bottom Republican pile and pull all the Eisenhower Republicans in, you don't have Democrat versus Republican. It's all we the people versus they the corporations. And every vote that's going on fits that pattern.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Are we crazy? I mean, it's all we've got is numbers. We don't have the dollars, but we've got the numbers, and we're going to have to marshal the troops.
That's true, and I hope that can happen. Hey, Mark, I'll leave it there. Thanks, pal.
You bet. I'll talk to you later, Mike.
All right, call again. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, Kathy in Maine writes, Mike, I agree that it would be impossible to impeach all five right-wing Supreme Court justices, but wouldn't we only need to impeach one to swing that 5-4 vote, providing President Obama could get a more fair-minded replacement confirmed by the current mostly spineless Senate? Hope springs eternal, Kathy in Maine. Yeah, that's true. I was thinking of the impeachment of all five as a form of punishment for their attack on the very foundation of this country, representative democracy, which is now gone. Or I should say representative government, self-government. It's now gone. It's been destroyed by these people. So, Kathy's right. Just impeach one. And but that's predicated on the idea that Barack Obama would nominate somebody who, look how close he came to not getting Sotomayor. Well, I shouldn't say that. Of course, she was going to get past the Senate Judiciary Committee, and of course, she was going to get voted onto the bench by the full Senate. But I don't think there's enough time left. I really don't. I'm not sure what's going to happen during the election in 2010. I guess a third of the Senate is up and the entire House. And given the propaganda and the lies and the distortions that have been put out by the right wing in this country, the Republicans and their spokespeople on radio and television, anything could happen. You know, I'm reading now that this could be like 94 Clinton's Waterloo, when he went from having a majority of both houses into eventually losing everything. The American people are stupid. Really, as a population group, American people are just belligerently, willfully ignorant. Just look at all those teabagger rallies, all of those anti-healthcare rallies. And I'm talking about back before what's left of the health reform, health insurance reform, was chopped into pieces to pay off all these right-wing Democrats. And even before that, when it was still just basically a workable idea, these mouth-breathing snots, most of them middle-aged or older, who would show up just wanting to have oral sex with Glenn Beck, I guess. I don't know. That's what it says in the dictionary. Or maybe with Limbaugh or Hannity or somebody. I have no idea, but that's what they look like. Every time I see these people, their mouths are open. And it's just like, oh, my God, really? But all these people would show up screaming inanities, nonsense, craziness, and then the Palin book signings. Oh, my God. So, and I realize they don't represent the majority of Americans, but they are the ones that the cameras love. They're the ones that the networks love. The networks love to send their camera crews to go photograph these people and put them on the evening news. Because they're screaming idiots. It's like going to a zoo and watching rabid apes, you know, throwing urine and feces through the bars. That's what these people reminded me of, the ones at these so-called town hall meetings. Didn't you get the same impression? The only thing missing was their bodies covered in dark hair. They all look like silverback gorillas without the dark hair, and just flinging a metaphorical handfuls of feces at the speakers who are trying to say, look, this is what this is about. So given all that, and given the fact that most Democrats have said to hell with it, I know I have, and I know I'll get some emails tonight saying, Mike, you can't do that because we need Supreme Court justices. Look, I put up as much effort as I could. And I watched John Roberts and Sam Alito be confirmed, and that never had to have happened. That simply did not have to happen. I listened to the Democrats say, no, we're going to save our filibuster or our veto or whatever the hell they thought they had. We're going to save something important. So, you know, and as far as impeachment, no, impeachment's off the table. Look, I'm not backing anybody who makes too strong a claim as on the Democratic Party. There are a lot of people who are going to run as Democrats who are really trying to break away from that, but they don't have the courage to say, I'm not a Democrat, I'm an independent. The teabagger movement is trying to claim that. We're supposed to believe that the Republican Party and the teabagger branch of the Republican Party are not one and the same. Of course they are. You know, it's just more smoke and mirrors. So the Democrats I'll be interested in are the ones who kind of shed the Democratic Party label. I mean, they can run as a Democrat, but where it concerns their political philosophy, it's not going to be the Obama-style Democrat, the Rahm Emanuel-style Democrat, the Democratic Leadership Conference-style Democrat. It'll be more like a, oh, I don't know who, Howard Howard, you know, the guy, the former governor of Vermont, Howard, Howard Dean. I kept thinking Howard Zinn. Oh, well, I spent too much time in the air the past weekend. So, but anyway, that's just kind of the way, you know, this is shaken out for me. Impeach one of them? Sure. And then what? If Obama loses control of the Senate, and I realize it would, but I say lose control, I mean, if you know, a five-vote switch, a four-vote switch, right? Four seats, I should say, switch. Or would it be five? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I'm just kind of down on the whole system. If I didn't get your call tonight, I apologize. We'll do it tomorrow night, okay? I'll see you then. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.